We're going to begin today with Gaza and the fears for now what will happen next in this war, with a threat from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that Israel will move to, quote, conquer Gaza, and where a blockade preventing the delivery of food, medicine and other vital supplies into the Strip is now entering its third month. US President Donald Trump is due to visit the Middle East this coming week. Ahead of the trip, the White House said yesterday it was close to finalising a plan for private companies to manage the delivery of aid to Gaza, a move that's been criticised by the United Nations because of concerns it will, quote, weaponise aid. Dr. Salem Garbia is a Palestinian man living and working in Sligo. His sisters and their families are still in Gaza. I was speaking to him a little while ago. He began by telling me about his sisters.
Yes, Colm. So I have two sisters left in Gaza, so Naima and Noor. Both of them have three kids, obviously with their husbands. They've been, escaping from one area to another, being evacuated from one area to another, fleeing one area to another for countless times, like at this stage. So now they're back in the rubble of their homes in Gaza City. They've been, living in nightmare conditions, like crushing conditions, like no food, no water. Every day is a struggle to survive for them. Even like for us to get the news about them is an absolute little miracle every single time we manage to get a phone call with them. You cannot imagine how hard and how crushing the conditions for them, seeing their kids, starving. If they're lucky, they'll get a meal a day. At the moment, there's absolutely scarcity of food. The water is filthy, not drinkable at all. There are loads of medical conditions being developed with the kids. It's just unbelievable, unimaginable. Harsh, conditions for them.
And when you say that they are living around the rubble of their home, is their home just completely destroyed?
Yeah, it's absolutely like they're as most of the Gazans at the moment. The home is completely destroyed. So like you go back to the rubble of your home, trying to get some useful stuff out of the rubble and put together some sort of a shelter, and then every day you try to improve it a little bit to, get protected from the rain if it's raining, or now summer is starting, which is absolutely difficult because that means they need more water, and water is very difficult to get and source. They can queue for a full day to get water. It's filthy, it's not drinkable. My little nephew Karam, he's 6 year old, developed kidney condition already. Like literally, I've seen a picture of him, and you can literally see the bones out of him at the moment. Like he should have been around 17 kg, now he's around 9. Absolute horror they're living through. It's just like for them as parents, seeing their kids, they're not able to protect them, they're not able to provide a shelter for them, they're not able to provide food, they're not able to provide water, and whatever they provide them, they're just making them more sick. It's just crushing the conditions for them.
And have you been able to talk to the children directly? What are they saying to you? What are your sisters saying to you?
A 2 weeks ago, I was trying to call my sister, and finally they did manage to charge the phone, and did actually reply on the phone to me, and I just was trying to cheer him up, and I was like, so how are you doing? And he was like, hello, I'm hungry, I'm really starving. Hello, I'm hungry. Like my uncle, I'm really hungry. He's starving. So I was trying put myself together, and I asked him, so I'll ask your mom to cook you something nice. What would you like to have? And he was like, I really would like a burger. And I was like, okay. And I talked to my sister, and all what she had on that day is a can of tuna. And she wasn't trying to delay the meal of the day, so at least the kids can have a meal in the middle of the day, so they can at least feel a little bit, full, for the rest of the day. That's all what she had on that day. Like, it just, I cannot imagine, like, a little one has to go through all those kind of horrors. And there is no ending. Like, if there is no hope, like, in the horizon at all. You know, it's been a continuous bombing. Like, the land is kind of, like, shaken, around them because of the bombing, like, is happening. No, there is no interference. There is no glimmer of hope that this is going to stop. And on top of that, there is no aid let in. And just letting children, women and men, just to death, literally.
How are your sisters? I mean, these are mothers watching their children suffer, trying to ration out what little aid they have. What effect is that having on them, on their sense of being able to protect their children, their own mental health?
They feel helpless. They feel crushed. They feel, hopeless sometimes. They try to do the best for their kids. It's a constant battle to survive. They when they have food, they give it to their kids, and they kind of like try not to have themselves, so at least the kids have some food. It's unbearable conditions for them. Like one of my sisters, she found like her master's thesis and her projects, in the rubble. So she got them out and burned them like to heat up some of the food. Like, you literally got, they got back to their homes to feel some sort of dignity out of what used to be like the place that they feel safe in. But there is absolutely no way to feel safe. They lost absolutely everything they have. The next thing is just like they feel, how long they will be able to survive the kids, we're under the fear that will I meet my sisters again? And they absolutely have that mind. Will they meet us again, or will they still have their kids again? It's just an absolute nightmare for them.
And as an uncle, as a brother, there is money at your disposal, but the means to translate that into aid to get to them is impossible at the moment.
That's impossible, Colin. There is no way you can get a penny into Gaza at the moment. You cannot get anything. Even all the trusted organizations that we all proud of contributing to and being, volunteering with them, they have no means of getting anything into Gaza. This is starvation for the whole community. Like my nephews, those. Four boys and two little girls. Like, they're between 2 year old and the oldest is 11, right? They're starving. Like, literally, I told you about Karim. You can see the bones out of his hands now. Just like, it's unbelievable.
Your parents got out across the border crossing at Rafah into Egypt last year. Is there any hope of getting your sisters and their families out?
We've been working on this tirelessly, continuously. You can imagine how difficult and how pressured my parents are. Like, they feel, they always consumed with a feel of guilt, really. As parents, they wanted to kind of like comfort their daughters. They wanted to be beside them. They wanted to kind of support them. We tried every single way we know it would work to get them evacuated from Gaza. Every single time we hit, a closed door or a wall, really. We've been trying with our local TDs, for example, to contact the Minister of Foreign Affairs. But at the moment, we've got nowhere, really. But at the moment, there is nothing really that we've got accomplished through the process.
And that was Dr. Salem Gharbia, a Palestinian man who is a lecturer in the Atlantic Technological University in Sligo. He was speaking to us in a personal capacity earlier. Now, still with me here, Fianna Fáil Minister of State Niall Collins, Sinn Féin MEP Lynn Boylan and Duncan Smith of the Labour Party. Minister Niall Collins, let me first start with you with just the last part of that interview and the need to alleviate the suffering of Salem Gharbia's family. He's an Irish citizen. His sisters are in Gaza. Is there anything the Irish government can do or is attempting to do currently to help them evacuate?
Yeah, very hard to listen to. And my heart goes out to all people who are impacted by what's going on in Gaza. It's truly catastrophic. And I think the actions of the state of Israel, you know, are really reprehensible, and hopefully a judgment day will come. Look, I mean, in terms of government and the Irish government, we've been very strong and vocal in terms of advocating for a ceasefire, the increasing of humanitarian aid, the unconditional release of all hostages, and of course finding a long-term solution to the whole issue. We find ourselves in a minority. I think we have to call it as it is. Within the European Union, we've recognised the state of Palestine along with Spain, but unfortunately not everybody across the European Union is on the same page, and we've been absolutely forthright in saying that the EU-Israel trade agreement has to be reviewed in light of the actions that we're seeing being inflicted upon the civilian population in Gaza.
Right.
But coming back to what you've raised.
Yeah, if you could just answer that specifically, because I have a follow-up question.
The Irish government has been involved through various partners in assisting Irish citizens to exit Gaza right since the very start of the conflict, and rightly so. And that's obviously managed through the Department of Foreign Affairs and the Consular Service. It's extremely detailed, it's complex and it's delicate. I don't obviously have any information at all in relation to the circumstance that we've just heard. But needless to say that the Department of Foreign Affairs, we have a policy to protect. If you're an Irish citizen, you're obviously entitled to consular assistance, and I'm sure that assistance is forthcoming in terms of trying to help those
people. What's the protocol with regard to the siblings of Irish citizens or the immediate family members of them, do you know?
I can't speak to that specifically, but suffice to say, people who are siblings of Irish citizens, I'm sure are a high priority with the Department of Foreign Affairs. Okay. I just can't speak to the detail of it at this point in time.
Your party leader, the Taoiseach Micheál Martin, this week, and he was speaking outside of the Dáil, so we can assume he doesn't fear any challenge on what he had to say. He called what Israel is doing to prevent the delivery of food, medicine, and vital supplies into Gaza a war crime.
Absolutely.
If that's the belief of the Irish government, what's the next step? Because that's an escalation in obligations, surely, on the Irish government.
Well, I think he's absolutely right to call it out, and I support him in calling it out, because what we're witnessing day in, day out on our television screens is layer upon layer of war crimes. And it offers no future, it offers no solution, it offers no hope to anybody in the region that's affected, and particularly the people of Gaza. And weaponising innocent people for their own narrow end, I think really has to be called out. So look,
calling it out is one thing, and that's been done. That box has been ticked. Micheál Martin has described it as a war crime. But under the responsibility of to protect obligations in the United Nations, all diplomatic channels within the United Nations have to be used to protect civilians who are victims of war crime. Ireland believes in that. So what's Ireland doing specifically on foot of this?
Well, I've outlined to you specifically the actions that we have taken as a country, as a government, and we have been to the fore, particularly within the European Union, in relation to this. And I think it's important to say that all of the Irish people, the vast, vast majority of the Irish people, are on the same page in relation to this. And we have been leading within the European Union. But unfortunately, we find ourselves in a minority in relation to all of this.
Responsibility to protect obligations are to use your channels within the United Nations. So is the government going to issue a formal report to the International Criminal Court, for example, on foot of this?
Look, that detail I don't know, but I can tell you, for example, Micheál Martin was asked previously what would he do in relation to an international arrest warrant in relation to members of the Israel government, and he had said if Ireland were in a position, we would execute those international arrest warrants if we found ourselves so in that position. So we haven't been found wanting, and the government won't be found wanting.
Okay, but
with regard to
Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Ireland did issue a report to the International Criminal Court on foot of that. So substantially, what do you believe is the difference in the moral case when, in the case of both, Ireland believes that a war crime has been committed?
Look, I can't speak to the intention of the government in relation to this, to that particular detail that you're asking me in relation to. But on the broader issue and on the broader question, I don't think we've been found wanting in relation to doing this. And if it comes to that, I would have no problem in supporting the government in doing it.
OK. Lynn Boylan.
Well, I've listened carefully to the minister and he hasn't actually outlined anything concrete that has been done by the Irish government, and there's lots of steps they can take. But I would also call on the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, to condemn the comments of the EU High Commissioner, Kaja Kallas, and what she said on Wednesday, because what we've just heard about the aid situation in Gaza, the Taoiseach accepts that it's a war crime to withhold the aid. You have the High Commissioner of the EU for Foreign Affairs and Security saying that she will find an alternative aid source and is completely undermining UNRWA, which is, you know, part of the UN, is part of the Palestinian
having
state.
Articulated an entirely contrary position, I think, 2 days previously.
But she's out there on the record on Wednesday saying that she is happy to work with Israel to find an alternative source of aid. And we have to be very clear, UNRWA doesn't just deliver humanitarian aid. Apart from the fact that they're protected under international law, they also provide education. They also provide services to medical services, but also to refugees that have been displaced from Gaza. I was in Cairo in February. I met some of the Gazans who had managed to get out before that border was closed. I met with a five-year-old child, Omar, who has lost his arm and he's lost his entire family. And the situation for the Gazans in Cairo is also dire, and the Irish government could be doing more to help them as well.
But would you accept that the Taoiseach's articulation of this, the description of what's going on at the moment, of this blockade as a war crime, is an escalation in what the government has been saying heretofore, and the clear articulation of that is a step, at least by your own analysis, in the right direction?
No, it is an escalation in terms of the language that they're using, but we've heard strong language previously from the Irish government. What we now need to see is action. And
what's the first concrete step you want to see taken?
Well, I think there's a list of things we can do. We haven't seen one line of legislation on the Occupied Territories Bill. The EU, the Irish Central Bank, is facilitating the sale of Israeli war bonds. Israeli war bonds that are being advertised as part of their war mission. That could be ended tomorrow. We have also the situation of the weapons that are carrying out the genocide in Gaza are coming through Irish airspace and in some cases landing in Shannon. There's lots of actions that could be taken. Commissioner McGrath could end the adequacy agreement with the EU and Israel in terms of data protection, because we know that Israel is using personal data of Palestinian people to target them.
We don't know what's landing in Shannon because there aren't inspections being carried out. We'll get to that particular issue in a moment. But Duncan Smith, I mean, what concrete step do you think the government should be taking on foot of this? We will be discussing, you know, the Occupied Territories Bill shortly on the programme, and I know you support that. But on this specific issue, the provision of aid and the obligations of Ireland under the responsibility to protect, what should Ireland be doing?
I do think we should be issuing a report to the ICC. Now, it will not go anywhere. Israel is not party to the ICC, International Criminal Court. They don't recognise it. But, you know, it was an escalation in the right direction of language from Micheál Martin at the Global Irish Summit there on Tuesday, but it has to be backed up. I would hope, and I'm sure we'll have parliamentary questions go down, I've requested, as have Sinn Féin and others, a debate on Gaza to get more information from the Taoiseach this coming week. That hasn't been granted, but we're expecting it the following week. And hopefully there is negotiations taking place with the likes of Spain and, you know, in terms of doing something jointly in this regard in the EU context. The EU, we've just marked Europe Day during the week. what the EU and how the EU are approaching what's happening in Gaza, you know, belies the fundamental values of the European Union and what they're allowing to happen. And if they are to support and back up this privatisation and militarisation of the provision of aid in Gaza, that is something that Ireland cannot stand over. UNRWA, for those that don't know, they're not a pop-up aid organisation. Right, they are civic.
I mean, the Geneva Convention says it's the obligation of the occupying power to make sure that vital supplies reach the civilian population. It doesn't say how they're supposed to get there. It doesn't have anything to say on who should be delivering that aid. In fact, no, it says it's the obligation of the occupying power. It's the occupying power's obligation to deliver.
But there is a structure there for delivering aid. In non-conflict or non-active conflict times, there'd be 500 to 600 lorries going in. Now it requires 1,000 to 1,500. There is a structure there. It can be delivered through UNRWA, the World Food Programme, WHO. They've been doing it for years. It's difficult, it's complex, it's logistically hard, but they know how to do it. So it's not that the expertise are not there. They're there. But there's a choice now between Israel and the United States not to use them, to bypass the multilateral organisations that are there with these like fig leaf arguments that aid is going to be stolen from by Hamas. Like, this is an absolute nonsense when you speak to the aid workers who've been on the ground there for decades.
Niall Collins, is there an argument then for if European partners are not going to listen for the moral case to follow Ireland's lead, what about the case for efficacy? I mean, there are 59 Israeli hostages still being held by Hamas and other militant groups in Gaza. It's believed about 24 of them are alive, but more hostages were released when ceasefires were in place, when there was more aid coming in, and the prospects of that, even people in the Israeli military believe, have diminished since the announcement of this latest potential offensive into Gaza.
So, I mean, in relation to hostages, we've been very clear. We want to see all hostages released unconditionally. Now, the number of hostages, I'm not sure you're asking me a question in relation to
well, I'm saying that if Europe isn't going to listen to what Ireland is saying in terms of acting on foot of war crimes, and if there are countries in Europe that are more sympathetic to Israel's position, should the diplomatic effort be focused on the efficacy of securing the release of hostages through means of ceasefires, delivery of aid and dialogue?
Well, I think every avenue has to be pursued. Absolutely, every avenue has to be pursued diplomatically. But particularly, I think we have to keep on our high-profile efforts within the European Union. We saw the joint statement this week by the foreign ministers of Iceland, Ireland, Luxembourg, Norway, Slovenia and Spain in relation to the expanded military operations on the Gaza Strip. I think that was welcome. So more people are beginning to take a different position in relation to this within the European Union, and I think that's really, really important.
If the European Union, then, if you believe that Ireland has been at least in some degree influential in shifting the position of the Netherlands, led the way on this, then what Ireland does matters. So, I mean, we have the situation of flights going through Ireland's airspace. The Taoiseach to Simon Harris said in the Late Late Show last week he doesn't believe there are planes carrying munitions flying through Irish airspace en route to Israel. But it's been confirmed by the Department of Transport last year that at least 9 civilian aircraft bound for Israel did pass through Irish airspace and that they felt it necessary to investigate those allegations. So, should Ireland be doing more if it believes that war crimes are being committed?
Well, that's been investigated, and rightly so. The Department of Transport are carrying out an investigation in relation to that when it was reported across the media. And I think it's right and proper that all appropriate actions are taken by the Department of Transport and that a report is furnished in relation to that.
Does it take 8 months to do that?
Well, it should take less time. I agree in relation to that. This is going on far, far too long. And is it a case that the Department of Transport aren't receiving cooperation from people who are overflying Ireland? I don't know, but I think...
We won't speculate what the level of cooperation is. It's up to the Department of Transport to make that explicit if that is the case. But Duncan Smith, on this specific issue of traversing Irish airspace.
Yeah, we have mechanisms here. And they might sound, you know, in the overall scheme of things, quite light, but they're mechanisms we do have when Irish law is being breached or where there is a belief that Irish law is being breached. Like, we can fine airlines, we can ban airlines. That's what we should be doing.
Is the legislation adequate, though? Because it says the air navigation, carriage of munitions of war, weapons and dangerous goods, Goods Orders 1973 and 89 provide for inspection of a civil aircraft only whenever it appears that a flight would be in contravention of these orders. So it's a kind of a double bind. You nearly need to know that something has been done wrong.
But
before
the airlines
you can...
are reporting it in their waybills.
Yeah,
they're carrying
the
these
airlines
weapons.
Are reporting this. El Al has been reporting it, the Israeli national airline. So the IAA can go in and issue fines. And this is, again, there's another debate that we probably have on another day in terms of neutrality. This is breaching our neutrality by flying munitions over our sovereign airspace. It is. And if we're to be positive about our neutrality and not to be seen as walkovers or pushovers or a light touch, we need to be imposing sanctions and fines. We need to be improving our legislation where it needs to be improved, and we need to be becoming more active and showing states, rogue states like Israel, that are being indulged by the major powers in the EU, that this will not stand for Irish people. It will not stand in Ireland. It will not stand in Irish airspace.
All right, so Lynn Boylan.
Yeah, and like this week at the committee, at the EU Committee on Relations with Palestine, we heard from numerous experts on the arms trade, and the one thing they said that would really hamper Israel's genocidal attack on Gaza is the F-35 fighter jets and the components that are being facilitated through the Irish airspace to get to manufacture those F-35s. Because what Israel is doing is it's flying those fighter jets 24 hours a day, which requires replacement of the components on a regular basis. So if you stop that supply of those components, you basically ground those F-35 fighter jets. And they said that has to be the priority for all member states.
Okay, Niall Collins, on October last, and the 23rd of October last, the Ditch website notified the then Transport Minister Eamon Ryan, the then Taoiseach Micheál Martin, the Junior Minister in the Department of Transport James Lawless, Simon Harris, the then Taoiseach, and the Garda National Economic and Crime Bureau, and also the other parties to this, to let them know that there was a flight leaving Memphis to Cologne carrying arms that was going to be passing through Irish airspace, and that this was not declared, and reminding them of their legal obligations. If people are making efforts to alert the government to this and action is not being taken, can you really say all options are being exhausted?
Well, all I can say to you is, at this point in time, is all of those flights that have been complained about, and rightly complained about, are alerted of, to my knowledge, are being investigated by the Department of Transport, and rightly so. And I would like to see that investigation and that whole process concluded a lot quicker, because if our laws are being broken and if our airspace has been violated, we have to act. But we need to get the facts on the table first. Like, for example...
Is the legislation adequate to that? For example, you know, spot checks in Shannon, that would require, some form of legislative change. But the government is about to get rid of the triple lock because it believes that its sovereignty is being impacted by the influence of the permanent members of the Security Council on Irish defence policy. I mean, this is an issue of sovereignty on Irish sovereign territory, the ability to inspect aircraft for compliance with Irish neutrality and the obligations under that.
Yeah, and let's get the facts out there first. I think, look, I mean, it is serious, and I'm not trying to dismiss or I'm not trying to diminish the seriousness of it, but I just think that we should allow the Department of Transport to furnish the report to the government, to allow the Department to...
For how much longer? How much more time?
Well,
An independent commission of inquiry where you have to take arm's length. So what's the time frame? When should they deliver this investigation?
At least
one of the flights.
As soon as possible, in my opinion. I think it has gone on long enough. I mean, how long? You've rightly asked the question, and I'm asking it now in a rhetorical manner. How long do we have to wait to get the facts? And I think it can't be allowed to go on too long, because it brings the whole process into disrepute. That's my personal view in relation to it. And I think we're entitled to know, has our airspace been violated? I don't agree with your comparison in relation to the triple lock. You've outlined, obviously...
Well, I'm outlining the concern for sovereignty you've articulated.
But the urgency at which the government are trying to ram through the triple lock, and there's a complete lack of urgency from the minister when it comes to
this report into weapons.
This is where your priorities should be when it comes to sovereignty.
You've just created a fact in your own mind that there's violations in Shannon, when there's no evidence to back up what you've said in relation to that. It just gets trotted out time after time on programmes like this that you know, arms are being flown through Shannon.
If there's no evidence, then why is it taking 8 months for a Department of Transport report if there's no evidence?
We're talking about two different things.
Okay,
then.
We did ask the Department of Transport if the report
absolutely
was ready. They didn't indicate
that.
Anything to us that they were having difficulty engaging with the airline. So it's a matter for them. Duncan Smith, yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, in terms of arms overflying or landing in Shannon, this is not a phenomenon that has just happened since October 7th, 2023. This is going back a long time. And groups such as Shannon Watch and others have never been discredited in terms of their claims. What we have in terms of what was reported in the ditch and what has been said on the floor of the Dáil, none of that has been adequately discredited as being false. So the onus here is on the government to actually expedite this investigation. Just pick one flight, pick two flights and make an example of it and show that we in Ireland have teeth in terms of preserving our neutrality, in terms of preserving our sovereignty, and that we are not a light touch and that we're not a sausage and that we're not going to support indirectly the crimes and the genocide that's going on in Gaza.
All right, we'll end with this statement from the Department of Transport. It says it's been undertaking a detailed examination of the allegations made concerning contraventions of Irish legislation to the carriage of munitions of war and civil aircraft. This has included engagements with air operators. The department's work in relation to this examination is not yet complete, so no report has been prepared for government at this point. We'll take a break. We're back in a minute.
Saturday with Colm O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.